Pulp MX Network production.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, and Motorsport.com on RacerXOnline.com. With your continuing gracious support of our sponsors, we're thriving at over 1,800 podcasts delivered with over 20 million downloads. Click the Amazon banner on Pulp MX to help us out. Donate via Patreon if it suits you. And as always, enrich your moto lifestyle by working with the sponsors who support us. The original Moto Podcast, featuring legends of the past, stars of today, season previews, race reviews, introspection, opinion, facts, and laughs. Here's the voice bringing it all to you, Steve Mathis. Say that dedication, your frustration.
It's a brilliant summer plan as you've given up. Yeah, welcome everybody to the Fly Racing Racer X Review Show, Pittsburgh. New venue, well, sort of new venue, back in Pittsburgh for the first time since 1983. Lots to dive into when it comes to this race, including some clutch rides. I'm going to use the word clutch three or four times when it comes to Vial and Cooper Webb, man, because there's lots to get into. Again, Fly Racing, Racer X, Pittsburgh Review Pod. Thanks to the folks at Fly Racing, Cooper Webb wearing Fly Racing gear, winning the main event. RJ Hampshire, of course, Chance Hymus, many guys wearing Fly Racing gear. And go to the Fly Racing website, pick out a Formula helmet, pick out some Evo gear, maybe the Kinetic Mesh, because summer's getting here, and type in the code PULPAMEX when you check out, and you can say with the folks at Fly Racing, flyracing.com. Thank you again to Renthal and Maxxis as well. Renthal.com, of course, motorsport.com, we'll tell you about more about later. But yeah, thank you to the guys at Maxxis Tires, of course. Fast Freddy Norin, Chambers, Kay Clayson putting in the main event, and Kay Clayson taking the high road when it comes to the Yamaha LCQ Challenge race as well with his Maxxis tires. MXSTs developed by some guy named McGrath, and they got soft intermediate to hard terrain tires. So, yeah, if you haven't thought about Maxxis for a while in terms of tires and a high-end tire, well, start thinking about it a little bit, all right? All right, I'll tell you more about those other guys later on, but let's dive into Pittsburgh and everything that happened. First up from Fly Racing, flyracing.com, Montreal Supercross champion Jason Thomas. What's up, JT?
Not much. Interesting weekend. I've been preaching this pivotal weekend. Like, I just felt like it was really important, more than maybe the last two would be. And so, yeah, I'm excited to kind of dive into that because it played out the way I thought it might.
No Wygant today on the podcast, but special guest, course heading. You know this man from his work with Swap Moto over the years and Transworld and so much other things. He's helping us out with this pod. He was at Pittsburgh as well. Michael Antonovich, what's up, Anton?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on. Sorry I'm not wearing Fly, JT. My bad. That's That was everybody Steve. Else but me. I felt very out of the group there for a minute.
It's okay. Steve, could you imagine how upset I would be if this was me having a fill-in and Weege is just like, yeah, no problem. Who can you get? I would not do well with that.
No, not at all. I wish I could fill in. It's my show. I wish I could fill in.
I know it's a me thing. I'm terrified of being Wally Pipped.
Yes.
You kids don't know who Wally Pipp is, go Google it.
Course heading, Anton. How's that going?
It's going.
Everyone check it out on Instagram. Yeah, you got some cool stories.
It's 15 races in.
Yep. Hey, guys, did you know Brock Glover won the last one in Pittsburgh in 83? I don't know if you guys, did you guys see this?
Oh, we saw it. Did you see the trophy?
I saw the t-shirt.
Yeah, saw the trophy.
Is that an original topper on the trophy, or is that an addition?
I don't know, man. Well, first of all, Feld should be embarrassed because that Pittsburgh trophy from 1983 is better than anything they give him today in 2025. But, I mean, look, Brock's cool. Brock's a friend of mine. They really leaned into Brock being 83 champion this weekend on social, at the race. Was it on the broadcast, JT? Did it make the broadcast?
I think there was a mention somewhere in there.
Okay.
But
look, it was really cool to go back to Pittsburgh. Obviously, Heinz Field, or that's not Heinz Field, whatever it was called, but the crowd was into it. It was a big crowd. The weather held off pretty much. Track was pretty good. It was cool to be in Pittsburgh. Pits were packed, by the way. The fans showed up. And now, as maybe lukewarm Philly and New York attendance was, Foxborough was too, but that's for different reasons. It made up for it in Pittsburgh for sure. JT, it was cool to go back to a new city.
Yeah, I get, you know, insight because of, you know, my affiliation working for the television crew and these things. So I get to hear kind of what races are doing well, what races we really need to try to promote. And from the get go, I'm talking like from the day tickets were available, Pittsburgh was just rocketing off to the races. So they knew this was going to be a home run very, very early on. But yeah, I think to your point, the other rounds maybe suffered a little bit because Pittsburgh was the one everybody had circled on their calendar. So in any case, this weekend in its own right was out of this world home run. I would guarantee we're going back as soon as possible.
Anton, Pittsburgh, cool.
Yep, Pittsburgh was popping because even to look up from the stadium floor and then up into the upper bowls that in the last few races of the big stadiums that we've been to, you haven't seen anybody up there. And then to see a really good turnout on both sides was great. I'm not really surprised that it was a huge turnout because you see High Point just like, what is it, an hour and a half, 2 hours south of there is always really, really good. So I figured that a lot of those same people were going to come up. But then that's drawn from a lot of other places because 2 minutes before we started this recording, we just finished the drive home from Pittsburgh back to St. Louis. Dude, you could get to that race from a lot of different states really, really easily. A lot of different hotels that are there. And then the downtown was great. So I see that being on the tour for a while to come now. Yeah.
Well, actually, I talked to somebody that would know we're not there next year. The NFL draft is there in the city. So we're not going back next year. But I think 2027 or whatever, everyone was happy with it for sure. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it back, just not next year, Anton. But
fair enough. I know that they were definitely wanting us to be respectful there and like beautiful place to hear, you know, so much about getting ready to go and then to take the first lap through that stadium. You know, like every stadium looks the same after all of this time.
Yeah.
But then to walk through that one and all of the stuff that they have for the Steelers Hall of Fame was huge. That was a really, really nice place.
And they rebuilt it quickly after Bain blew it up. They did a good job on that.
That was your joke of the weekend.
It was. People. And then I got all these people in my mansion saying, oh, that was 13 years ago. Yeah, man, it was just like, just kind of a joke. Like, I don't really know the construction frame, time frame or anything else, but yeah, anyways. All right, lots to get
on the ground. Did you look on the ground outside the Star Racing Pit, outside the 450 truck?
No.
Home plate for the old Pirates Stadium was right where the
truck
was parked at. Yep.
Oh,
so
really?
There was a commemorative plaque like right in the concrete.
Yeah, yeah. They got that in Detroit, too. If you walk not far from a hotel I stayed at one year, you just come across the old Tagger Stadium home plate in the ground. You're just like, oh, okay, cool. It's like just in the middle of nowhere, but like not middle of nowhere, but middle of downtown, you know, like middle of a parking lot or whatever, or a field. So, all right, lots to get into when it comes to this race for sure. And again, Fly Racing, Racer X podcast, Michael Antonovich, Jason Thomas, Cooper Webb, man, we knew Chase would be good at the last two. He had to stop it. He mentioned as much afterwards. Chase caught him, made a mistake in the whoops, caught him again. But, dude, that guy never cracked. He hit his marks, lots of lappers, a tough track with the weather and the way the dirt was. And, man, I thought the whoops were going to cost him. I really did. I was like, this is not good for Coop. But Chase kind of stopped skimming him and start jumping him. And then about five laps to go, Coop found a better way to jump him than he was. He was going, like, slowing down or going two in. And then about five laps to go, he started going three in. That got him a little bit of a gap. JT, I'll start with you. Like, just, I mean, if he wins this thing and it looks good, Pittsburgh is it.
Yeah, and I've been leaning into that. I really thought that Coop would not want to go into the last two. And on paper, it's so easy to say, yeah, of course he wants to turn the math around as soon as possible. But when I looked at the way the tracks were, the conditions, you know, Denver's typically really hard packed. You can't go inside anywhere because there's simply no traction. You can't cut down in the corners because there aren't any ruts in the corners. So none of the things that Cooper Webb likes to do really work for Denver or Salt Lake. And then you couple that with how phenomenal Chase Sexton has been specifically at Salt Lake. And then I think his skill set works really well for Denver. That's a really bad setup for Webb when you just look at that from the outside and their characteristics. And if Sexton wins out, he wins it. that's not where Webb wanted to be. So I really felt like Pittsburgh, you had a little bit of weather, so the track was going to be softer. It was going to be ruddy. And then when I saw the jumping line and the whoops really start to come in, and I think Justin Cooper kind of set that off. Like, he shot off the opening salvo for that to happen. I was like, man, Webb has to do it tonight. The situation cannot be more set up to change the narrative of this championship and really take all the pressure off. And in typical Cooper Webb fashion, to use your word, Steve, clutch, he came through in the way he has time and time again in this championship.
Anton, I did think, like I said off the top, I thought Chase was going to get him by skimming. Coop's line of jumping wasn't great. And then Chase went back. But afterwards, in talking to some of the riders, they're like, yeah, man, like, where? Okay, so he can get up to Coop by skimming, but where's he going to pass? Because Coop was ripping that split lane. Riders said there was a lot of hard places to get by a rider out there. You have to kind of wait for a mistake. But I don't know, Anton, did you think he was going to get him, or what did you think of that battle?
So I thought that the whole race was entertaining, and it just kept building off of what we've seen over the last couple weeks. Because, you know, JT, I'd love for you to talk about Coop, and especially in the last practice session, cutting down so tight and then getting all the way to the left to find some fresh drive in the whoops when nobody else was. But then seeing just how they played out all day, because Coop got a lot of laps in that last practice and Chase didn't get as many heaters in, how that dynamic goes through the heat race, all of that. Coop acing the start.
Honestly, Coop,
but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think in Coop in the main event, his plan from the get-go was to jump. You know, like, cutting down and qualifying practice and those things, he's trying to get a good lap. But I don't think he really thought at night in the race when it really counted that he would be blitzing. And mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but I watched them start to break down. I looked at them kind of how they were shaping up, and I was like, there's no way after a 250 main that Coop's going to want to come all the way back to the left and try to blitz when the next corner is another left, so he's going to be not set up for that left again. So to me, I think it played out exactly how he was hoping it would. And man, whenever, you know, I asked Chase Sexton on the podium, like, what was going on in the whoops? Like, we were blitzing, and he basically just said, like, I was using too much energy and I couldn't keep doing it. Like, he mm-hmm. just couldn't keep doing it. Because all I really was trying to get him to define was, did he think that Coop was making up more time and he needed to switch to that to try to match time? Or did the whoops get to a point where he's just like, no moss, like, I cannot blitz these anymore? And it was the latter. He just basically said, like, they're just to a point where I wasn't able to do it or continue to do it. It was too draining on him physically. And you also have to factor the risk. Like, he could crash. You know, there's always that part of it, too. It's not just, well, I was getting tired, or, well, I was losing time. Well, yeah, you can throw it away really easily trying to blitz whoops where no one else will blitz them. Like, that's, you know, like, maybe Ferrandis did a few times, but it was really sparse as far as who could blitz them well. I did want to touch on, though, really quickly. You asked, where do you think he could make a move? I thought that elevated berm, you know, because Webb was pretty slow there. Like, he was really taking his time on the outside and then dropping back in. I think Sexton, if he was close there, could have made a pass. Like, I think we saw other guys take shots there. We saw Vial take shots there. I think that section was open to it if Sexton could have got close enough. But to Coop's credit, he never let him get close enough.
I disagree with the whoops, though, JT. Dylan blitzed those things every time I saw it, and Dino told me he never stopped blitzing them. Now, I didn't watch Dino's every pass through the whoops, but afterwards, Dino said, I never, and then McElrath vouched for it too, that Dino never stopped blitzing.
Well, which part do you disagree with?
That you said they became unblitzable, and maybe Dylan did it a time or two. Like, they never stopped, yeah, those guys.
Well, Chase stopped for a reason.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Stopped. The only point I wanted to make there, and kudos to those guys for continuing to do it, because they were annihilated.
On the right side. Dylan was good. Yeah.
Yeah. All that's night. Great. Good for him. But he was 25 seconds behind the leaders, and Sexton stopped blitzing because he couldn't do it anymore. It wasn't like, well, Coop's making up time and I need to switch lines. He straight up said, like,
yeah,
it wasn't able to for me to do it anymore.
So the reason that I thought it was so interesting in the last practice was after last week in New Jersey, how was Cooper going to rebound? You know whoops are going to be important. That led me to believe that he worked on whoops all week. I know that he didn't ride outdoor stuff like Jay Coop did. You know, Jay Coop did a couple outdoor motos this week. Cooper didn't, from what I was told. And
Listen,
what I'm getting to, though, knowing I have to go try to do this. I need to go figure out the whoops. I need to at least work on that. And then in the start, I have to go exactly what you said, JT, execute, because he controls the race going out of the first turn. He has a great drive. He comes over, you know, from being a few gates over from the doghouse, has the line through the first turn, and then just gets it done through that first rhythm lane to where he, hey, if I have to work the whoops, if I have to start skimming them or jump them, I've already hashed that out. But if I can do what you said, JT, which is my first plan of attack, by just controlling the race from the whole shot stripe, that's what I'm going to do. But I need to have something in my back pocket.
Yeah, but Anton, I don't know if – I know you helped us put this thing together. Did you listen to the show last week or watch it? Because there was a little bit of anti-Justin Brayton talk last week.
I heard.
Okay, well, I'm glad he's not on right now because I have a source – and it pains me to say this, but Justin Brayton helped Webb with whoops this week.
Oh, I don't doubt that.
What?
I don't doubt that.
Yeah, JB did some work with Coop. I don't know if it was via FaceTime or if he went down there. I don't know, but Brayton rebounded from his trashing that I gave him last week, and he helped Coop with whoops this week, was the word on the street. Now, whether it was bike setup or technique or, like I said, I don't know how he helped him. But he helped him.
Coop also said in the press conference that they made a shock change. Him and Gilly, he let Gilly have free reign, and that's something that they're going to work on too. So maybe that's even a couple elements getting Paul put into one.
If he didn't blitz in the main event, did it really matter though?
Yeah.
If Brayton helped?
No, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. Exactly, right? Yeah, you know, you hate to dwell on the whoops, and because it was more than that, right? But it was such an interesting thing because – you know, like I said off the top, Coop or Sexton went off the track, caught him back up, gonna blitz the whoops. It was gonna happen there. I thought it was gonna happen there. I'm waiting for it. And then, yeah, just Chase stopped doing it for whatever reason. And it was kind of the way they went the play out. Now, did you notice, JT, that Webb's line with like five to go where he went three in?
Yeah, there was a like a pre
a pocket. Yeah.
Thing that developed. And I didn't really know it was there until the post-race show. I went over there and stood there and waited for the podium things to end and then my time to film. So I get this probably a 10 or 15 minute window to just study it and look, and I'm not in any rush. And yeah, the line was pretty clear where he could avoid that first drop in rut and jump from before that. And yeah, it's just one of those things that those types of things pop up. They happen naturally. And if you keep an open mind and you're looking around, you can really capitalize on that. And that was a big move for Webb because, you know, we talk about the whoops and yeah, there is more to the track than that, but it's been the narrative between those two because they've been so close everywhere else. And I think the biggest part of this story was when Chase stopped blitzing and he has to do what Coop does well, you could see that Chase is not comfortable. He doesn't have the reps. He hasn't jumped a million times like Justin Cooper and Cooper Webb have. He just not as practiced and experienced at jumping whoops. And immediately the second time he jumps the whoops, he goes off the track, you know, but you can just see the lack of experience in those conditions, having to do that rear its ugly head at the worst possible time. So I don't know what's right or wrong. It's a catch 22 because by default to win in Supercross, blitzing is the way to go. Like we know that, right? Over time, blitzing whoops is going to be the best way to hit them. But so you don't want to waste all your time learning how to jump whoops and spend, you know, thousands of hours to become a jumping expert the way Justin Cooper and Cooper Webb have. But man, does it come in handy when you really need it to have that in your back pocket to know exactly what to do, to be in the right gear, to know how to execute that as well as those guys do. And this was just such an important time where Chase Sexton was probably wishing like, man, I wish I had practice jumping through these things more because he just didn't look comfortable there at all, man. It was never the same. And I think that's how you can tell someone's not that comfortable is every time he went jumping through there was like something different. He was like trying different things. And one time it was pretty decent, but he would like like it was never the same repetitive motion that those other guys had dialed in.
Yeah. It was fascinating to watch. And then Sexton found that jump line near the end, but it was two laps after Coop found it. And I bet you Coop put on 0.3 right there when he first found that section because they were going so slow to drop in, to double in. But yeah, so Anton, 12 points, two rounds to go. I mean, look, we had a guy blow out his Achilles, so like anything can happen, literally. It's tough, though. It's tough. These guys, they were 22 seconds ahead of Justin Cooper. And by the way, Justin Cooper's not going to screw with Cooper Webb in these last two, I'm sure. AP could, but, you know, we'll get to him. 31
Justin
seconds.
Cooper would sit out before that happened. Like, he would What's not that? Race before he would get in the way.
Yeah. It's just hard, Anton. I don't know where these 12 points are going to come up for Chase Sexton. I just don't see it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that that's what both of them were saying in the press conference last night, because they know they have to have the situation play out, and who's going to get in the way of them. You know, Kenny was riding well, and you know that Kenny's definitely going to be on Team Chase to do what he can do. But then, and we've kind of talked about this at the races over the last few weeks, there are more people that are definitely like, what camp are you in? Are you wanting Chase to win this on track, or are you wanting Cooper to win this? And like, who's your guy? Because there are racers that have their guy. They're like, hey, I'm going to give him an extra little bit of room when he's coming by to lap me.
It's fascinating to see AP about this too, though, right? AP tight buddies with Coop.
Oh, right.
Right? But then teammates with Chase. AP is really the one in the middle. And he's a good dude. He's not going to beat nothing dumb. But that thought has crossed my mind for sure.
He just doesn't want – I just think he doesn't want to be a headline. That's it. Right?
Yeah.
Like, do your thing, race as hard as you can, but make sure you are not the story, I think would be the goal.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, you know, in the last two, do the other 22 riders just let everybody take the step forward? Hey, go do what you need to do. Because
they have a choice.
It doesn't really, and when they're so much faster, but I mean, through everything, what's to say that one guy gets a seventh place start and one guy gets a second place start, and who moves over? How do you let these championships play out?
I don't think it matters.
And who knows?
I don't think.
I think you're going to get through them anyway. Those two guys are going to get to first and second regardless. It's just depending on, are we going to get to see it be the heads up 1-2 racing that we've seen, that we've been so lucky to see through the last few weeks? Because that's the real anomaly of it, is the fact that they've gotten linked up every single time.
I have this hypothetical question that we've seen it happen time over and over again, and I don't know really why this is. It's almost like a phenomenon of nature. Late in series, the best guys separate themselves. And this weekend was a perfect example. Philly or East Rutherford, if I could speak, was another example of that. Because think about like a couple weeks
before
that.
Philly was too, yeah.
How crazy the battling was at like Seattle. Like, these guys were all over each other. Like, it was a dogfight in the top five. And we've seen this year after year. I can go back. You can go back to 2003 with Chad and Ricky. You can go back, you know, 5, 6, and 7 with Ricky, Chad, Stu. Like, there will be battling. Like, Wyndham will be in there and Villeman and these guys. And then at the end of the year, it's like nobody's even close. Like, what the hell happened to everybody? So do they get worse? Like, have AP, Cooper, Roczen, all these guys dropped off a little bit? Or have those guys really laser focused in and elevated their game because of, you know, the stage that they're on? I don't have an answer. I'm posing a question, and I'm going to ask Ricky this week because he's been there. Like, I would love to know riders who have been in that spot, their perspective. But it's happened time and time again, and it seems to always happen, is those guys are, to this weekend's point, 22 seconds ahead of third place Justin Cooper, who was riding phenomenally well, by the way, but he had nothing for those guys.
AP went backwards fast, and we'll get to him a little bit too. But yeah, it always happens, JT. I wouldn't ask Ricky because he was the one always elevating game. I'd ask like Timmy or like some dude that near the end of the series. Because I just think in talking to riders over the years, I think the guys are like, look, man, I like the dudes that are battling. I don't want to be a headline, like you just said. I want to look forward to outdoors. I want to stay healthy. I just think it's all that. And the intensity from guys that are not in championship form drop off a little bit. That's all, you know. But
one question that I would love to ask both of those guys, and it's something that, you know, I've been thinking about in these last few weeks, as you get to the end of the season, it feels like we're in hyperdrive. These races go so fast, because yesterday when I was at the track, it felt like I was just in East Rutherford a couple days before that. And granted, it was a week, but it felt like overnight. And so do those weeks between races go faster, or do they go slower? And like, JT, when you were around Chad in those days where you guys were doing crunch time and you're putting in those last motos, did those weeks feel faster for you to go through them because you knew the end was in sight? Or did they drag on because of what you have on your mind? And that would be just such another interesting dynamic to see for both of these guys, because they both know where they're going. They both know it's 14 days left, maybe what's 5 total days of riding between now and the end of the season for this.
From my perspective, both racing from my own, you know, point of view and watching those guys battle for titles. If you're not in this pressure filled situation, it really goes fast because you're worried about outdoors and the days are just kind of clicking off. Those guys are in agony, right? Because they're so trapped in their thoughts about what can happen. And every single day is just like, you're watching the clock. And yeah, it's to me from watching them, it really seems hard on them because they can't escape the thought and the pressure and the expectation and all those things. And you see when they win or, you know, when these guys win, yeah, they're super excited, but I watch it and I see relief. Like the first expression and emotion I see from those guys is relief of like, oh my God, it's over. Like I can finally breathe and not, you know, be walking on, you know, pins and needles here every second of my life, wondering, am I going to make a mistake? Am I going to crash? Am I going to hurt myself? So yeah, I think that these weeks are really, really long to your
question. One thing I hate about our sport, and I've said this a few times, is like literally a Supercross championship is everyone's goal, right? It's just phenomenal to win. It's maybe the most prestigious off-road motorcycle title. Maybe it's even better than street bike racing. I don't know. But it's like you work so hard in the off-season for this thing and you win it and like, yeah, man, we're on to Paula. And it's like you get no time to soak in winning the biggest championship in off-road motorcycling there is. And I always feel for these guys because even in the media, we just move on. We're like, okay, outdoors, Jet, Eli, here we go. Like, what's going to happen? Like, and literally this is a dream for these dudes and it's the biggest deal ever. And we soak it in about 2-3 days and we just move on. And like, yeah, it's just, I feel bad for these guys sometimes. I've said this a few times, like, I don't know. It's just the way our season works. The meat grinder never stops, right? So,
I would say the only time I agree, that's a fair point. You know, only the winner we should really be worried because everybody else is like, yeah, we're moving on. Like we're ready. We're done with this. But I really noticed it in 2023 with Jet and Hunter when Jet won the 450 title and went undefeated, and then Hunter won that first pro motocross title in 250 class. Leaving Ironman, and we were headed towards the first SMX playoff year, those guys could not have been more disinterested in what was going to happen in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Like they did not care at all. And I think their results in Charlotte reflected that. Like if you remember how bad they were in that first Charlotte round, like they weren't even close to their performance 6 or 7 yep. days prior. I really saw it then. So I think that same feeling was that you're talking about. I watched that happen with those guys. So it is a point for sure.
It's Anton's fault. The media's fault. It's Anton's fault. But like, even as a mechanic, like after the last outdoor, I was never on a team that won an outdoor title. Langston blew up the wheel there. So we didn't win that one. And then Yamaha never won anything. We were on Supercross on Wednesday after Steel City. Like, yep. All right, here we go. Let's start testing Supercross. It's like, man, we just went through the 12 rounds of ups and downs and drama and everything else. Justin Cooper, third. I asked him after the race, was that 450 heat race the best you've ever ridden in a 450? He didn't really disagree. He wasn't stoked on the main event. He did have the fastest lap overall in the main event. He got third. He moved up, right? He got AP. He got Kenny. Rode really great. He was a little bummed. Anton, I don't know if you got a chance to talk to him. He was a little bummed that he couldn't get closer to those guys, but I mean, to me, I'm like, dude, that heat race, holy shit. Like I said, that might have been the best Justin Cooper's ever raced, a 450. That was amazing.
Yeah, that heat race was awesome. I mean, for me to watch it, you know, just to see him make the pass on Chase, because Chase is the guy right now, and then to just do it and then leave him.
And drop him. Really had
me,
yeah.
Drop him. And then that really had me wondering a lot, like, how does Chase, like, rebound for this going into that main event? Because you didn't just get beat by the guy you're battling for the championship with. You're getting beat by his teammate who's a tier down from him and all of that.
And how hard was he ripping that split section, too, the split lane? He was unbelievable in that thing.
And that, you know, that makes me just so even more interested about Jay Coop, because as we've watched through the last few weeks, you know, he can put a fast lap in, then he's like, all right, he's in the top three conversation. And this even goes back to his 250 days of being a good qualifier. But seeing him make the constant progression up and up, getting a heat race win, having a podium pretty close a couple weeks ago, then losing out on it, seeing how much that motivated him from up close, like knowing he was very upset to miss out on that podium and then to come back and do it now, it's just great building. And to see him ride that way, like, that goes back to something that's always interested me so much, when you have a guy that just has his 7 minutes on the track where he just hits every mark and does it is great. And how do you replicate it? And he's going to be thinking, how does he replicate that from here on out? How do you extend it for 22 minutes?
Well, you know, he got a little feisty with Coop last week. And like we said earlier, I don't think he's going to get in the way in the next two races. You know, he wants to make sure the team brings this thing home and he's buddies with Webb. But God, if this was round 4 or 5 and he had that heat race, JT, things might change a little bit. That's the kind of thing, that heat race, that sometimes can unlock a guy.
Yeah, he was really good. I still think that the whoops are a liability. You know, if we have to go to tracks where blitzing is clearly faster, he's in trouble. Like, that's still going to be a thing. Like, he hasn't fixed that. He hasn't even come close to fixing it or tried to fix it yet. So he is riding phenomenally well. I think the rest of the track, he's as good as anybody else. He's one of the best starters. Like, he has almost every tool in the toolbox to be a podium contender most of the time. And you got to remember, we don't have Tomac. We don't have Jett. We don't have Anderson. We don't have Hunter. So the job's going to be harder. But he has taken a step. If he can ever figure out the whoops where that's not a gigantic liability, then I'll start talking about him being like, yeah, man, he could be a guy that wins on any given night. I just think that's too big of a hole right now for it to be an every week thing.
AP fourth. Good job for AP. He got dropped early on. I interviewed him after the race. He said, yeah, man, I went backwards. And then I had, you know, the second half of the main event was way better. He talked about making a shock change after or coming into the day. And I said, well, you've been riding really well. So did you change from that setup? And he's like, no. I'm like, why would you make a change? He's like, I don't know, man. I just didn't feel good. I just didn't feel good. So they made a change and then it was worse. And it took him a little bit, half of the main event, he said, to get used to it and find his flow. And then he got better. And he, you know, he was a little bummed. He threw up, threw away the podium. He's been on a bunch, but I think afterwards he was like, well, the second half of the main event was much better. He pulled away from Malcolm. You know, he got Kenny. So he was, yeah, he was okay with the night. But then he talked about how he got stung by a bee on Monday while riding moto. And his lap, you know, he just talked about motocross. And then that led into, like, what if you're like Spider-Man and you're going to grow wings from the bee and you're going to, you know, have a stinger? I said the AMA is going to protest you. And the interview got weird, but
serious,
yeah.
Conversation you're having, clearly.
Yeah, yeah, it's AP, right? So, but yeah, he was. It was really the tale of two main events for AP. The first half, not good. Second half, good. So, Malcolm got fifth. Oh, go ahead.
Hey, if you can speak to this, JT, because in the press conference they were talking about how the track, that one long rhythm lane, was soft, and then everything else was pretty rock hard. So, how difficult would a suspension setting be to try to set that up? You know, you have one spot, probably the longest rhythm section that you have to figure out for that, but then 95% of the track, how would you make a change like that going into the weekend and then figure it out?
Yeah, really, when it gets soft like that, you just want to make sure that you're stiff enough to handle that compression into the faces, especially when they're going like 2, 3, and 3, you compress really hard. But the rest of the track was getting so hard based that you wanted to be more compliant, get more traction, be like flex a little bit more. So again, anything with suspension is always compromised. It's never going to be perfect for every part of the racetrack. So you basically, in the shortest answer possible, want it just stiff enough to handle that G out type stuff for those threes, but then also as soft as possible where you can actually get traction on the like hard base stuff.
Malcolm fifth, rode up from the back a little bit to get fifth. Kenny sixth. Kenny was kind of invisible to me. I didn't really notice him all day long.
Heat race was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Heat race was good. But like, yeah, I never saw any flash in practice. We talked about how his injuries are still, he rode this week. So he did practice this week. But yeah, just kind of one of those nights for Kenny sixth, like whatever. He was higher, right? He was up fourth, I think, ran fourth for most of the main event.
See Malcolm see him up the last lap?
No. Oh, he did? Oh.
Yeah, Malcolm in the split lane. They both went inside and Malcolm blew him into the next lane.
Oh.
Yeah. Got him.
He did apologize after, though. They did after.
It wasn't like he hates Kenny or anything. Like, they're battling for position, but he got him pretty good.
No, I'm glad you explained that. I saw him talking, but I didn't know what it was. So thanks for pointing that out.
Anton, what did you think of, I meant to mention this earlier, what did you think of Webb's baby. I'm rocking the baby. I got the baby. I don't. I have a baby, or I need a baby.
He put it to sleep. Put the title to bed. Yeah. I thought, but like, I have a lot of questions on that. I think it's sick. I love it. I think that the dynamic, because if you watch the press conference back, this got brought up, and like Chase takes it well. You know, for Chase to be on the receiving end of it, all you can do is smile about it. You can't get pissed off. But I thought, like, where is Cooper coming up with that one? We knew the gun one, like he's been doing that for a bit. But the, oh my God, the cradle, when he hit the finish line, I didn't know what he did. And I'm like, well, you just blew my finish line shot. What was that? And then when I saw it, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, well, he just took a hand off of the finish line, right? But does he know, like, you didn't put the baby to bed yet? We have Achilles. We have a guy literally 2 years ago blew the Achilles out. Like, anything can happen, man. I don't know if you put anything to bed. But hey, I mean.
Steve, you know me, and this is like, way far from like my style. Like I don't like guys being like in your face stuff or rubbing stuff in. Like I would never like, well, for one, I would never win the race. Okay. Start there. But this is like really far from like the type of behavior I would lean into. But as a spectator and as a fan and like watching it, I'm like, man, these guys going back and forth and finger gunning each other and make like, it's super entertaining, you know. Yeah. I would just be scared of like, man, I'm setting myself up for disaster if things go poorly. Like, that's all that runs through my mind.
I'm with you. Like the wide receiver. This isn't the same as what Coop did, but the wide receivers that celebrate the second touchdown when they're losing 48-14, right, and they celebrate the 14. You know, the touchdown to get them to the 14, like they won the Super Bowl. I'm with you on that. But I mean, we're older, I guess. But yeah, I mean,
totally. Okay. I think it's a personality thing. There's nothing wrong with it. Yeah. It's just not necessarily my style. That's all.
Dylan, seventh. He was up to fifth. He rode really good, man. He rode well in the heat. He's been much better lately. We had him on the show last week and talked about it. He's been definitely been better lately, and he was up to fifth. And then I don't know exactly what happened, but he did get passed by Malcolm and passed back by AP, I believe. And so he got seventh. Still a good ride. Good heat race for him. Good qualifying again. Dylan's much, much better than he was off the start. I'd like to see, obviously, we have some injuries, but this Dylan at the beginning of the year, it would have been nicer to see. But
this feels like this end of season Dylan feels like the beginning of season Dylan in 2024. Like he was like 5, 6, 7 first like five rounds. He's like flipped the script for those 2 years.
Savachi 8th, McElrath 9th, Dean 10th, and Oldenburg 11th. Huge battle. Huge battle. All those guys, the entire main event. It was pretty interesting to watch. Dino, I watched this happen once, but McElrath told me 2 to 3 times he got Dino, and Dino blew by him in the whoops by blitzing. So Shane actually broke it down for me after the race a little bit, and he used the analogy of using too much energy to blitz. He said that I can blitz. That's too much energy for me. I got to figure out the rest of the track. And yes, Dean was awesome there, and full props to Dean, but Shane was like, I needed to not do that. I can really ride strong the whole track if I don't blitz the whoops, because I can almost relax while I'm jumping, which we all know. Yeah, which we all know is the thing. So Shane was, yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to say, a lot of it's breathing. Like when you blitz, you hold your breath. And when you jump, you're breathing. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but that does make a big difference.
So that was a great battle to watch, those guys going at it. And Anton, Dean's now gone 9-10 in the last two, which I honestly, like, if you had said, hey, Dean's going to come back after not riding all year, he's not going to be as bad as Philly. That was terrible. He went backwards, and it wasn't good. But if you had said, hey, he's going to clearly be better than Christian Craig, I would have said, no, I don't think so, man. Wherever Craig is, slot Dean right behind him. That's would have been my thinking, even if he's on the HRC bike. And Dean has surpassed that.
Mm-hmm. And it's really impressive, too, to know, you know, Dean had that shoulder injury from, you know, the last WSX stuff and hasn't really been doing a lot of riding. I mean, I'm sure he's not burning down whoop section laps when he was over in the UK for that time. Like,
no.
All the riding that he did through the first part of the year was just on race weekends. So
he never practiced. Yeah, he said he never practiced when he was over there.
He's always been really good at whoops, though. I mean, I can remember, this is so long ago, but 2010, Dino was still on 250s.
You're talking about San Diego?
Well, he was great there. He killed everybody in those whoops.
Yeah.
But I remember practicing with him in California, and there were whoops that, like, I never even considered blitzing. Like, I looked at them, and I was getting, like, I don't know, 12th in 450 class every week. No shot was I even going to try. And he was just crushing these things on his 250, like, no problem, lap after lap. So for me, when to see him blitzing the gnarliest whoops better than everyone around him is not shocking information for me.
No, it was a great race for those. Oldenburg rode well, too, to get 11th. I really didn't like Oldenburg's jersey. It was a throwback Steeler jersey with just black and yellow stripes going horizontal, and not a good look. Just not good. We had some Steelers there, though, I guess, and Justin Hill was hanging out with one guy, and I don't know. I didn't see anybody else.
I think was his name.
Yeah. And Glover was there, too. He won Pittsburgh in 83. So, yeah. Glover, I don't know if you guys.
There were a bunch of Mike Logan is a Super Bowl Steeler. He was there with his kids. There were a bunch, yeah. As you mentioned. I was trying to name a few.
So that was a great race to watch. By the way, thanks to folks at Fly Racing. Use the code PULPMX when you're checking out. If you listen to this, we appreciate it. If you're watching this for our second week on YouTube, thanks. Appreciate it. Anton's doing a good job putting these things together for us. And Renthal.com, Honda, Kawasaki, KTM using Renthal products. Of course, they support privateers too, like Rod Bell. Now, Rod Bell is a Renthal athlete. And of course, Grant Harlan as well. So Renthal.com. And mountain bike parts are now available at Power Sports dealers. And also their lock-on grips, amazing. So Anton, I don't know if you want to put a pair of lock-ons on that YZ125 you have. But
250.
I thought you got a 125.
125 is the California bikes. That's too cheap out here.
Yeah. Okay, so you're 250 two-stroke guy. Okay. Well, Renthal.com, check it out. Appreciate those guys for coming on board. Colt Nichols, 12. Justin Hill, 13. You got anything? I didn't notice a whole lot.
Good battles, dude. Jay, like, from watching on the floor and then filming from my thing, all the battles that you just talked about earlier, Jay Hill throwing it in there too. A lot of bar banging, and you know, it's, you could go ask these guys, is this important or not? And it's important for them. And if you're really looking for something to look at, how many points are getting made in these last few weeks, but you just got to enjoy the racing because it's these guys that are just going for it. Close friends know what the other one's going to do. It's awesome.
I was in the beta truck before the night show, and I was mostly talking Pulp Mex Fantasy and giving Benny shit. Jeff was there, by the way. Jeff Bloss was there, JT.
I talked to him. Yep.
Yeah, legend. Yes. And as you know, I'm Team Oldenburg over Benny, number one beta rider. Doesn't make Benny happy. Doesn't make Jeff happy. But I will say that talking fantasy, I'm like, hey, listen, guys. Cade qualified 13th. A-Rod was 15th. Who would you pick and why? And Oldenburg was Team A-Rod, and Benny was Team Cade. And so I just want to say that Oldenburg couldn't have been more wrong. Cade put it in the main event. So Benny gave me some good advice because I picked Cade. So
well, your olden team Oldenburg is blasphemy. I'm going to coin that term. This is okay. Blasphemy.
Yep. Well, Benny got close, and now Benny got 22nd, and Mitchell got 11th, and so we got a nice cushion for number one beta rider going in two rounds to go. So Christian Craig 14th. I can't get him to text me back. He's got to be in a deep dark place. I can't find him after the races, Anton. I don't know if you have. He's got to be in a deep, dark place, Christian, because he normally gets back to me. So I don't think it's going well.
I talked to him a little bit, just like said what's up when I was at the Yamaha truck. I'm not really like shaking anybody down for post-race scoops right now when I'm at the Yamaha truck at the end of the night. But he hasn't been down. Like every time I've seen him come out and get on the bike and everything and like go through the process to go out, he seems happy and like seems like he's happy to be there. It's got to be frustrating with the results and knowing what Christian's capable of, especially after what we were hopeful for. But yeah, I mean, also, when I saw him ride off the track at Vegas, I think I was like one of the first people to see after he hurt his knee. And I instantly knew, I was like, all right, well, there's 9 months that we're going to lose again. Like, how long is it going to take to get back to this? And we're about 9 months, you know? So what does the summer look like? And then what does it look like after that?
He was good in qualifying. I don't know what he ended up, but he also crashed in the whoops. He flipped his way at the end of the whoops in session two. So, by the way, we lost our first practice session again this weekend from weather. And let me just once again say, phenomenal to have this schedule. Phenomenal. Show up at like 11. You're out of there by midnight. Two sessions. Let's call this like just amazing. Amazing. You guys agree?
Yeah, It's nice. It was
a little fresh, but they're good.
Freddie Norn won the LCQ. Fast Freddie made it happen. Chiz 16th. Harrison 17th. Harlan Moran's. Jeremy Hand, he from a Yamaha LCQ race at this Friday in Denver. Hand needed to take a dive to get into the race, into the top 17, and he did not. He knew where he was in the points, and he rode himself from 6th to 2nd or 3rd in the LCQ. And Cade rode himself into 12th to like 9th and or heat 8th, sorry, he got Mitchell Harrison in the heat. And Cade was in 17th. And so Cade and Hand did the right thing, and they got passed in the points by Austin Kozad. And neither one of those guys is going to my race on Friday on the pulp race. So they didn't care. They rode hard. Shout out to Jeremy Hand and Cade Clayson, the heroes that, you know, if you want your children to grow up to be upstanding, do the right thing kind of guys, it's Cade Clayson and Jeremy Hand. So they both knew what they knew what was on the line, and they didn't care. They put it in the main event. Shout out to those guys. Yeah, I don't know anything else about those guys that we have.
I mean, they've definitely made more purse money than Austin Kozad had this year, so that is like that's the right thing to do. Have Austin get the spot that he needs. But like for Cade,
hey, Cade was getting that 3-3 too. Cade was doing that 3-3. That was impressive. Like the guys around him were not doing that.
Mm-hmm. Admittedly, when Cade came back, you know, midway through the year, I was wondering how he's going to be. I'm very impressed with just main event Cade doing it, not really having any, you know, he's still having Cade moments, but they're not as much for the lack of race time that he has. Like he's doing very well. And I like Jeremy Hand a lot. So to see him doing what he was doing, he was smoked after that race was over. He was pretty much sitting there throwing up as soon as he came off the track, it looked like. But yeah, both good guys that are just doing it.
By the way, speaking about that 3-3, Dino told me that that's why he was getting passed. He wasn't doing it. So last week, Dino's like, look, man, after Jerry crashed on that 3-in, that was it for me. I never did it again. I was kind of freaked out. And I'm like, yeah, I get it, man. I get it. And then this week, Dean was like, you know, because you were going on to the big. You were going 3 on to big again out of the first turn. And Dino was like, yeah, man, I cased it, and that was it. I didn't feel safe. I'm not doing it. And then it cost him.
It didn't look that bad to me. Like honestly,
it didn't because 250 guys were getting it, right? So,
like, not that, like, they didn't look that challenged to do it either. So, I mean, I wasn't like, out there. I'm not trying to criticize anybody, but I didn't get the feeling that it was, like, super gnarly.
No, I didn't either. But, like, when I talk about Cade doing it, like, all the guys at Cade's level were not doing it.
Yeah.
So, I'm with you. Like, when I see 250s do something kind of easy, I'm like, oh, okay. Like, it's not that hard. Again, I'm not out there, but I'm kind of with you. So, all right, that's the 450s for Pittsburgh Fly Racing, Racer X podcast. Thank you to those guys. Use the code PULPMX when you check out at Fly Racing. I'd appreciate that. You can get a discount on anything that they cover. And they got women's gear. They got children's gear. They got off-road gear. And then, of course, they got the stuff that Hymus and RJ and some guy named Cooper Webb wears. So use the code PULPMX when you check out the Formula helmets. Amazing as well. Thank you to the folks at Maxxis and Renthal. As I mentioned earlier, I want to give a shout out to Racetech real quick. Racetech.com. We'll do the Racetech rant tomorrow night on the PULPMX show. And also thank you to the folks at Motorsport.com. OEM and aftermarket products, great prices, free shipping on everything over $79. Thank you to the folks at Motorsport.com. Go through the banner on PULPMX to help us out. Good guys, and Onyx Maps as well. Weej isn't here to do the Onyx read, but Onyx Maps, they have, is it 100,000 trails, JT, I think? What does that guy say? I don't know.
100,000.
Mark trails? I don't know. It's a lot. Onyx Maps, listen, McGrath uses it on his phone. He pulled it out one time and showed me he had Onyx Maps on his phone, so that's all you need to do. Trails, mountain bike trails, UTV trails, all that stuff, Onyx Maps. So, we'll figure that out. All right, 250 time, Pittsburgh. Glover won in 83. I don't know if you guys heard that, but okay. Vial, dude, we talked about clutch with Cooper Webb. This dude went had a big one last week in practice, a big one again this week in practice. He got smoked in the heat again this week like he did last week, and then he just ended up, dude, Nate Thrasher, we thought he was going to pull a Nate Thrasher. He didn't. Vial reeled him in. He beat Hammaker. He beat RJ. Got his first win of the year. Anton, I'll start with you. Like, Really impressive. Really good. Tom Vialk. That kind of came out of nowhere for me.
Dude, 100%. Because after how this last month has gone, I really kind of thought it was over. And then that big crash in practice, I was like, oh, it's really over now. Like, how?
Yep.
What are we just getting through for these last few? But then to see him just latch onto the rear wheel of Thrasher and just hound him as much as he did, even the passes that he made to get by Max Nolan, getting through traffic, any pass that he made, it seemed like he was doing it, making sure that he needed to go forward and not waste any time. You know, again, I'm watching through a viewfinder of the camera, so I don't see every single thing detailed back and forth. But to rebound like that after a horrendous month. And he said in the press conference, you know, you take out the DNF or the 22nd, whatever that's classified at Foxborough, and this point situation looks way different. But those last 3 weeks would look way different after that, too, because who knows what kind of situation he was riding in his head through the races and through the week.
JT, impressive after crashing like that, you know, in practice.
Yeah, I mean, he had to regroup. He never did that 3-3, though, the section we were talking about with Kay.
Yeah, what was he doing? He was doing 2-2.
Yeah, he was going inside. The same thing they were doing before that line developed, inside 2-2, 3-2. But it was slower. He was losing a lot of time there, you know, to basically anybody and everybody he was battling, most notably Thrasher.
Or Volin. Volin, too, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. You know, in the end, though, he had to do this. You know, we talked about it last week. We talked about it, I don't know, on the 30-odd shows we do a week, Steve, where this was kind of a do-or-die scenario. Like, he had to make it happen this weekend because, realistically, there's no way he was going to go in to Salt Lake City down, 9-6 to two guys and find a way to come out on top over both of them. That wasn't going to happen. That is not a realistic scenario to think you're going to go in there and win. So he needed to turn the tide this weekend, and he did exactly that. And now he has to do it again. Like, that's the whole thing. You did it once. It's awesome. You have to do it again, and you have to ride a lot better than you did last year at Salt Lake. He rode horrifically bad under pressure in Salt Lake. So you just have to put that race out of your mind and go in with the same mindset you did in Pittsburgh and just say, I have to go win. You have to think like, I have to be here to win the race. That's what it's going to take, because I think that's the way those other guys are going to attack it as well.
We all thought Thrasher was going to win, though, right? Just to pull a Thrasher. Like, I mean, you know, I was just like, okay, here we go. Like, he's on it. He's doing that 3-3. We know Nate can pull this every now and then. And I'm like, okay, you know, RJ's not really moving forward. We'll get to that. It's a terrible start for Seth. So I'm like, okay, well, yeah, Nate Thrasher's going to win.
I got a little worried when he couldn't pull away from Vial. Mm-hmm. Because the longer you let Vial hang around, the better his odds are going to be, because he's so consistent. He knows how to win races. Like, he's won races and championships around the globe, and he has a lot of experience in that scenario. So yeah, but like, when he couldn't get away, I started to worry a little bit, because Thrasher normally in that scenario, like the races he's won in the past, he just kind of checks out and he's like, yep, he's out of here. Like, and nobody really challenges him. So I haven't seen, and this isn't a knock on him, we just haven't really seen Thrasher win like a duel, like a last couple laps, like battle to the finish, and Thrasher comes out on top. So I wasn't really sure how he would necessarily handle that type of scenario.
Yeah, Thrasher, we've said this, Thrasher has more wins than podiums. Like, he either wins or doesn't end up on the box, right? Like, it's just a weird, weird Nate Thrasher thing. But still, hey, he rode really well. And I think he's going back there next year. I think somebody told me he renewed his contract with that win. I mean, I don't know if you
have, like, if you're that team, why would you not? Like, who are you going to get that can win races over Nate Thrasher? Like, that's the question you always have to ask. And the simple answer is nobody. So, I mean, unless you're just like to the point where, man, you've been here a long time and it's not working, we got to try something else.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you're looking at it objectively, of course they would keep him.
He doesn't really have any nationals. Like, he doesn't race nationals. He gets hurt. So, yeah, it's just a weird career. Anton, Max Volin, first career podium, Club MX guys. He was on it all day. He was on it in qualifying. He was good in the heat. Max Volin, he looked really good, and good job. Congrats to him. That's his first Supercross podium. So that's cool. Cool to see that Max do that.
And big for all the reasons that we all know, you know, from what happened last January to get to this point now and the bike setup stuff. Because the bike thing has been interesting to see them go through, because that handbrake setup has completely changed. They went through a couple iterations that haven't worked. They found the one system is a caulk that works really, really well. It has a massive aluminum bar that runs along there. But it's a proven handbrake system that they've figured out. And yeah, Max was great. It was funny on Wednesday or Thursday night, I was just here at the house thinking about just the racers and talking to my wife about him. And I pointed him out in specific, like, this young kid that was right on the cusp of everything. And is he going to get the chance to go back and do that? Is he going to get to fulfill that potential? And the podium is really, really good chance to show, hey, I still got it if I get the chance to do it. And that's a huge boost for Club 2 because they're going to stick with him. You know they like that kid, and they'll do whatever they can to keep him.
He told Kellen or Lewis, one of those two, probably Kellen because Kellen's the Max Volan whisperer, that he was getting some bad starts because he was dragging his foot and couldn't feel it in the dirt.
Wow.
Like just they looked at some film and like it was just holding him back a little bit, and he's got such a little feeling there. He's, oh, I'm dragging my foot. Who knew? So, yeah.
He downplayed, you know, the whole thing so much yesterday in the press conference, and it's a big deal. And I mean, I don't know how much he really wants to blow it out, but I mean, to think about everything that young kid had to do to get back to this point, and then you get a podium like that. I mean, that's got to feel so nice.
And good for Club, right?
He really downplayed a lot, but it had to be so extensive with what, from the pain to the mental side of stuff to painkillers, family, finding a team that's going to work with you. Oh, my God, I have to redo my technique. This part's not even working. Is it even possible? Unbelievable. It's really unbelievable to see him pull that off.
It's hard enough to get back to form after an injury, period. Mm-hmm. And you think about all the other stuff that you mentioned, it is pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Awesome to see. And, again, good for Club MX. Like, you look at Cody Shock and Max Volan here, privateer teams putting it on the box and winning heat races in case of shock and everything. So yeah, pretty cool to see. Good job by Max Volan. RJ did go down. He pulled an RJ, and honestly, I mean, I thought he'd be better. I just thought he would have some, you know, he didn't get a bad start. It was okay. And he didn't have sort of, if there's one thing RJ, you know, you can depend on, is him going faster than everybody else at some point and figuring it out. And the whoops, he's good in whoops. He's not scared, as we know. Just sort of a shoulder shrug day. I mean, he threw away the podium with the crash. He would have liked to get that. But, yeah, RJ was just okay, you know. So,
yeah. I don't know what to say about him in the whoops because, yes, I agree wholeheartedly. He's not scared.
No.
I'm much more scared for him than he is of himself, it would appear. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, half the time I don't think that it is necessarily working. Like, he just is kind of all over the place. I don't know what to make of it some days. Like, I think it's, he's trying so damn hard, but it just doesn't seem to kind of happen, and half the time he looks like he's gonna crash. And I think he was making some mistakes in the whoops and losing some time there because he was, didn't resort to jumping, was still trying to blitz, and none of it was kind of working. It just didn't seem like he had a great game plan for those.
Seth Hammaker, we thought something was wrong with his bike. He got a terrible start. He spun off the gate, he told us. And honestly, that first lap, we thought a flat tire, broken spokes. I mean, he...
The Pro Circuit guys ran to the truck, the cart, mm-hmm. and got a front wheel. Because I think they were thinking the same thing you were. I saw them run, grab the front wheel, and I was ready to like call in and say, hey, Hammaker's got a problem. And I guess not.
He just
to add context to what you said.
He was in a good mood. Like, he was laughing about it after the race. Like, he threw away the red plate. He lost the red plate, and he was still in a good mood. Seth's a really good kid. But he was like, yeah, man, it was crazy. Like, I was all over the place, and I'm surprised I didn't get landed on. And I'm like, dude, you were, like, skidding everywhere. It looked like you had problems. He's like, yeah. And then, like, he started ripping off laps. And we're like, okay, I guess he's good. But, dude, his first – lap and a half were horrific. Yeah.
If you would offer him at any point in his career the chance to go to Salt Lake and, hey, between you, RJ, and Tom, whoever beats who, you get to be champ, he would take that.
Yeah.
Any time in his career. So I think that's where his mindset is. That's where he's kind of like, yeah, it's great. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
I think he truly is kind of adopting that mindset. Is like, this is all, like, fantastic. So,
yeah. Yep. You know? And I asked him that. I said, hey, if someone had told you winner take all the final round, he's like, oh, yeah, I'll take that in a second. So, Anton, did you see Hardy Munoz?
Oh my God. Oh my God. I was on the backside of that berm as they're doing the jump into the corner, and I just see Hardy go over and I screamed. Like, I had my camera in my face, but screamed out loud because I was like, oh, he's done. He's done. To see Seth then get around the corner and jump out, then I screamed in joy because, like, oh my God, he did it, because then I knew the race was on.
Dude.
And to what you just said about Seth right now, like, after you got out of, like, oh my God, what's happening in that first lap? Watching him ride yesterday was incredible. There were some times that I watched him do practice laps and some other things, like especially from the upper bowl in session two. He's on it, man. He really doesn't seem like he could put a wheel wrong. And then that's what those last 12 minutes were like. And yeah, it was great. When him, Tom, and RJ were tied in points for that one brief moment as they were running through the order, I was like, of course. Like, of course. Like, of course it's this way. How would it be any different? How would it not be these guys? And it's amazing, you know, and exactly what you said too. He laughed about the Hardy thing because I walked up to him in the pits after the end of the night. He was leaving with his mom, and I was like, dude, I was terrified. He's like, oh, did you see us talk after the race too? And I was like, I did. For what could have been a terrible situation, he was laughing at it with Hardy. He's like, if it was anybody else, I'd have been really upset, but it's you. So, like, we both had a little give and take there.
Yeah, he rode well to get up to fifth, but and then he almost died, and then yeah, we almost thought he had a bike problem. It could have been a total disaster. So Vial is one up. RJ's three back. I don't know how RJ is going to make up those points on two guys. But, I mean, he could. Anything can happen. I think I like Seth.
What? He's three back.
He's three back, yeah. RJ is. Fly Racing Zone. I like Seth to do this. I think Seth's going to take this thing home. What do you guys think?
If you're RJ, you just go win the race. That's it. Like, you go in the race. I mean, you have to think, like, there's a really good chance if you win that Seth's not second. And if that's the case, it's over. Like, that's how you make up the points. Like, it's not that challenging. Like, you just know what's in front of you. You got to go win the race. And it's not that dissimilar to where he was last year.
He's done after Salt Lake, right? Like, summer's not happening.
I don't have official word, but I would not be shocked at that.
Yeah. So then what's to lose? You know, I mean, you got to go out and do it. You're going to be sitting on the bench for 3, 4, 5 months anyway, as it is. But I mean, that's to say that it's those three guys. Cause as we were talking about, earlier on the drive home too, who else gets in front of them? You know, do you think Cole Davies is going to score the maximum points? And then you guys are left fighting over a 2-point spread. And then who gets between you on all of that stuff too?
I think Davies and Deegs are the two fastest guys on either coast.
Oh, really?
I do. Yeah.
I think it's all really close.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think these three are going to be really tight in Salt Lake, though. I think they're going to find each other.
You don't think that Seth is on the pace of Davies and Deegs?
No.
Oh, really?
Wow. No.
Really?
Yeah, that's very surprising to me.
They're good, man. Davies and Deegs are good.
Of course they are. So is Seth. I would vehemently disagree with that statement.
Okay.
You know, we haven't asked this in the two prior showdowns that we had, but how much are the guys from the West region looking at the East region? How much are the guys from the East region looking at the West? Is just as far as bragging rights, because when you look at how the season started and it was, you know, the West Coast title fight that was shaping up and then immediately tapered off, and the 251 that on the East Coast that tapered up and then it settled out how it was. When we've had these two showdowns, I haven't really had a lot of hype is like east west. Everybody's just in their own element and worried about their own guys.
I think it's possible with that west thing's pretty settled. Well, I mean, we'll know more this weekend, obviously, but it's possible I don't know, is Deegs ever gonna lay up? I don't know, probably not. But it's possible the two west guys, if everything settles out this weekend, what is there to really bust your ass for at Salt Lake? I mean, I guess the point of being I'm the baddest dude ever. Maybe,
but I mean,
that
do
point.
Those two guys too? Are those two not the most motivated to be that right now? Hayden for his own reasons, and Cole growing in his own right too. Like, those,
yeah, but
you
but
really
like, hey,
want to make a point of Salt Lake on that?
I guess it depends on what happens this weekend. But if Deegs just wins or gets second and loses three to Davies, and it's kind of like nine going into Salt Lake, then I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see. I can see either side. Maybe, yeah.
I mean, it's 17 right now, so
yeah.
I don't think that Deegan's going to do anything outlandish in Salt Lake, though.
No.
Having talked to Brian a bunch, they're very, very championship-minded. So I don't think he's going to do anything crazy. But he doesn't have to do anything crazy. Like, he can just do his own thing and still be on the podium.
Yep, for sure. Hyman sixth in like, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, he got the win in the mud, and that's awesome. But like, there, the last 2 weeks, you've just been like,
I don't think his head is in Supercross right now. I really don't. I think he's trying. Of course, he's trying. Nobody that's out there racing isn't trying. But I think he's 100% locked in to pro motocross because Honda's been testing. Lars, the whole team's been down there for 2 weeks now. I think he's been really, really locked in on Fox Raceway, trying to get ready for that.
Anything on Hymus, Anton?
Nope. JT, you'll like a video I have coming out. He talks about just all of his contact points, and he talks about the difference in gloves that you guys have and the stuff that you guys do as a gear company to like fine tune his fit. So I'll put that up soon.
Yeah, that'd be great, Anton. I'd like to see that because I would like someone at Fly to work with me on fine tuning my fit.
Bet you.
I don't seem to get that same sort of fine tuning.
He had an interesting point about blue gloves. He said they feel a little bit different.
Yeah, it's gloves are the biggest talking point and flash point and whatever term you want to use for riders. It drives me batshit crazy, to be really honest with you, because it was never a thing. Like, even the best guys, it was never a thing. But these guys, man, and it's all of them. It's all of them. They are so picky about gloves, and no one, like, if you're just like, yeah, this works and this doesn't, cool. But everybody's different. Like, you go, this guy's like this with the glove, and then the other guy's like, no, that guy's insane. There's no way I could race with that type of glove. And you're like, all right, cool, man.
I'm going through this right now with my Fly gloves. I'm going through this. So if you, JT, if you want to send someone over here to help me with some models, we can lock up my glove choice. I haven't figured out a glove yet. I haven't.
Like, hey, honest to God question, what is the hot trend in gloves right now? Is it the full stretch? Because, like, I've had stretch gloves before, and I don't like how long they are. Is it just the traditional, like, burly style? Like, what is it?
Do you call that thing, like, the death style? Is that thing called the media glove still? What's it called now?
The media glove kind of got phased out. The mesh one is really
mesh.
Popular.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But man, it's kind of opening Pandora's box. Anton, like, some riders want the stretch, but then they feel like can bunch up too much because that is stretchy material, right? So it does flex. A lot of the talking point is around the fingertips. Mm-hmm. Do they have enough grip?
Length.
Do they, how tacky the fingertips are. Do they have too much grip on the clutch lever? Do they not slip enough? Like, is it too little grip, too much grip? Because they have, like, you know, silicone on the tips, right? So it's the craziest things that the average person's never even thought about. It certainly wasn't a thing for me. And again, I'm old. And I understand, like, having preferences, but man, the levels and it's not just us, it's every brand. I just clearly am close to this one. The lengths that brands are going to fine tune this stuff is unbelievable these days.
Well, I don't see any concern about my glove situation from the guy from Fly Racing right now. Sad.
Yeah, we've established that, Steve.
Sad.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I don't know what glove I'm wearing for the regional. I still don't know. So
I couldn't. You're gonna have to decide that on your own. You have the whole catalog to choose from, sir.
Okay, Cullen Park, seventh. He did lose fourth in the points to Thrasher with Thrasher's podium, but still fifth overall on the year for Cullen. Another good ride. Henry Miller, eighth. Simonson's good, man. Two races now, two top tens. Club MX guy, yeah, he's been impressive. His endurance isn't quite there, but it's still pretty good. Two wrist surgeries, I mentioned this last week, for Devin. And Anton, do you know Simonson at all? He's a good dude. You should get to know him. Yeah,
good dude.
Yeah, really nice guy.
What? First thing that caught my attention from him, and I've told him this story, was years ago when I went to Loretta's. He used to have long hair that hung out of the back of his helmet.
Yeah, we cut it for the race, remember?
I know. So then even think about how much his endurance and his stamina has gone up from when you shaved his head. Like, massive great gains over the last 2 years.
He was a little puffy back then. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
He was. The fact that we got that on TV mm-hmm. is amazing. Like, it was, my first Supercross year with Denver, we got that on. That was awesome.
Bryce Shelley, 10th. I think that's a career best for Bryce Shelley, and I had him in fantasy. We had to go to the LCQ, and we had to ride into the top four. So good job, Bryce Shelley. A little worried about Rod Bell. That guy's loose, and he was sending it, but he knocked Crockett Myers out of it to get into the main event, and then Bryce Shelley rode really well to do that. Isaiah Clark, 11th. Good job for them. Rod Bell, 13th. New Renthal athlete. Justin Rodbell. And he, in case you guys are wondering, he is switching to the 450 for the LCQ race this Friday. So much better idea than 250s up there in Denver. By the way, everybody, you can win a 2025 Yamaha YZ450F or a bunch of other prizes, including some stuff from Fly Racing, by buying a raffle ticket. All the money goes to the privateers. Verb Moto and Pulp MX, we're going to stream the race this Friday on YouTube. So yeah, check it out, everybody. JT is going to do the podium interviews. We're hoping to give away another $120,000 ish to 22 privateers. So, and we raised the money for Jerry. We're hoping to get $7,700. And I was stressed about this, because I was like, is there enough time for Chiz to run 77 gear and 77 number for Jerry, because he's going to ride for Jerry in the race? We got over 10 grand in a day and a half. So clearly my worries were, you know, unfounded there. So thanks, everybody, for doing that. Pulp MX Gives Back is a nonprofit foundation we launched as well. So, yeah, Chiz is going to ride for Jerry in that thing. Go to pulpmx.com, get yourself a ticket. And Anton, you'll be covering the thing on Friday as well. So we're going to do the same format we did last year.
Yeah, we'll throw in 100 for the hard charger again.
Oh, let's do that. Nice. Thank you. Yeah, prop bet on that. Call up 14th. Faulkner. Faulkner was good again. You're going to look at that 15th or Faulkner and be like, oh, shit. But qualified well. Was doing the three onto the table after the whoops. Not many guys were in 250 class. He was nailing that a lot. He did crash twice. He got taken out by someone in the split lane. They just collided into him, took him out. And then he crashed on his own doing that three on in the main too. So not a good results for Faulkner, but better riding. Yeah. So there is that.
Yeah, you wanted, honestly, we just wanted signs of life from him, as far as like the old Austin Faulkner. And we've gotten that
two weeks in a row. Yeah, signs of life. We've got signs of life, everybody. We put the panic button away and we've got signs of life. And we just got to get those paddles. And we're just shocking them. Just come back, Faulkner. Come back. And also, we had a little bit of spirited debate on the Renthal Reaction Pod that I'm going to post up. Lewis and I don't know if you guys know that Lewis fella. He's a little weird, but
number one journalist. I heard him say it this weekend.
Yeah, we're going to forget about that, Anton. We're just going to move on from that. Don't you think that Harrop will be top Triumph outdoor guy? Or do you think it's Faulkner or Jordan? We think it's Harrop. We think it's Harrop. I think people are going to be – I think Americans are going to be in a bit for a bit of a shock when he's beating Jordan and Austin outdoors. JT?
Harrop will be really good. Can he figure out the tracks quickly enough? That's always the question for these riders that have never been to these tracks. You know, it seems like they've been able to do it, but I still – pose that question. And then I would also say beating Jordan is going to be tougher than beating Austin right now. So maybe there's a chance he would be in between them also.
Kobush qualified top 10, I think, overall, and then made it through the heat. So good job, Lance Kobush. Hardy's Hardy. Hardy crashed.
I would hate racing against Hardy if I was racing. Hate it.
Yeah. So he's in the LCQ race this Friday, and I've had some complaints from some gentlemen that are on the line with him. Yeah.
He's great. He's a really good rider, but man, he can be unsafe at times.
No joke. He is one of the few that I'm like, oh God, I got to be on the track right now. Oh God.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have,
I don't say
trust
that
me. I know firsthand. Yeah.
I don't say it with vitriol. I'm just
no, and you know. I don't either. Very nice kid, but when I see that Yamaha come down the rhythm lane, I'm looking for my exit.
And from what I hear, Hardy, he's got big ones during the week. He gets up, dusts himself off, you know, goes as fast as ever. So yeah, a few privateers in the LCQ race have expressed concern that Mr. Munoz is going to be out there with them. So and maybe Hardy at altitude might be stretching that throttle a little harder. Stay tuned. Lahovey did really well. Lahovey. Did you know it was Pittsburgh and he had some gear and he's a local guy? Did you guys know that? I don't know. Yeah. I just feel like.
Oh, you're kidding. Yeah.
God,
do you know, him at all, or his dad or anybody?
I don't know.
Oh, man.
Good people.
If you know him, you knew this Pittsburgh thing was on the schedule and it was coming.
It was, yeah. I did meet Cody Groves this weekend, Arena Cross entertainer.
You just now met Cody Groves?
Yeah, he'd called into the show a few times, Anton, but I'd never met Cody Groves. So, yeah. Matty Jorgensen, JT, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Matty Jorgensen was on a Wildcat fill-in ride, I guess, for Lorenzo.
I didn't know that until I saw it on the weekend. But and I don't know if you know him very well, Steve. You probably know him better than I do, but he's it's a really nice kid.
Yeah. Yeah, nice kid. He screwed me in fantasy, so there is that. I harbor some of those feelings, but really nice kid for sure. And Luke Neese got hurt, I guess. Neese made the main. I just heard in a group text that he's hurt. So bummer for Luke Neese, because he'd been riding really well. He got last. He crashed crashing at 3-3, I think. Do you guys see that? Was that where it was?
I did not see it.
Okay, yeah, I think he did. So, all right. Anything else?
Speaking of crashes, Ryder Floyd's 250 LCQ crash. That was woof. I was terrified for a minute.
Is he okay? Did he get up?
Yeah,
Anton?
He's fine.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was hurt.
No, I thought he was terrified.
Not gotten a start. He's qualified really well. Not gotten a start. Broken Dan Truman's heart 4 times in Pulp Fantasy. And this was literally the first time I'd seen him get a start. Like, he probably, if he had just gotten through the corner, he would have made it because he's that good of a rider. And instead, he goes flying off the track. So, yeah, not ideal for Ryder Floyd. So, all right. Before we get too far into this thing, or before we get done with this thing, Anton, you grew up on the streets of St. Louis, hardworking man, auto body shop or something, or auto detail.
Used tires,
that's it.
I did detailing too. Used cars.
Exactly. So you're a working man, so the Brunt work boots are something that you probably wore, could use. JT and I, we grew up soft. JT grew up riding dirt bikes. I grew up not. Well, I pumped gas for a while. I could have wore work boots for that. But
you worked really hard.
Yeah, but JT, I was the one guy who refused to put on the Alpine Star boots behind the gate. So, okay. Anyways, Brunt work boots. Thank you to the guys at Brunt for coming on board with us. And man, they got a lot of good stuff going on. We got a lot of response to our social media for the Brunt guys. Pulpamex is the code to save at Brunt work boots. You can end up doing that. Thank you to the guys at Brunt. And man, they are fantastic. Lots of different waterproof ones or non-waterproof ones and different colors. Everything else, Brunt work boots. Code Pulpamex to save with those guys. Thank you to those guys for coming on board with us. And again, Renthal Max. Axis, motorsport.com, and Fly Racing, flyracing.com. Email them directly, and they'll work with you on gloves, try to fit your glove needs.
Please don't do that.
Yeah, please do that. They'll get you all the gloves you need. I'm trying to find my damn Brunt read. I don't have it. I suck.
Else? You know who those emails get forward to?
Who?
Me.
Really?
Oof. Yeah.
Yeah, email JT asking for a glove choice. All right. Brunt work boots. I can't find the read. I'm sorry for the Brunt guys, but Pulpamex code does save. Great work boots. Rod Bell is a Brunt boot athlete. So Rod Bell comes on the Pulp show. Parabino sends him bars and shit. Brunt, he asked me for a Brunt contact. He gets Brunt contact. People Venmo him $6K. Justin Rod Bell, everybody. Everything's coming up Rod Bell lately. So,
Summer Rod Bell.
Yep, exactly. All right. So, anything can happen, but we like Webb to take it home. And anything can happen, but I like Seth to take this 250 thing home. JT?
Coop, yeah. I think just the math, and he can play it so situationally. You know, everybody should think Webb. 250 East, I don't have a strong opinion. I don't. I know it's terrible analysis. I could just flip a coin, but I don't really have a strong opinion about it, right? Like, Vial gave us a lot of hope. RJ was lights out in this situation a year ago, and I think Seth over the last little while has ridden the best. So take your pick of those reasons why.
Anton?
I mean, I'm pretty much with JT on it's hard to make a definitive pick on one.
Oh, come on, man.
No, listen, the thing that interests me so much
about known for his waffling. We need you to make a pick.
We're not a prediction show.
Oh, yeah, no, I can't do that. But the thing that makes it so interesting is the three different scenarios that they're both in. You know, RJ's going to a 450. This is most likely his last ride on a 250F. Like, if everything goes right, never have to ride a small board bike again. His future set. The Tom thing through the last 4 weeks has been so interesting because if he won that championship and has to go up, and then you see the KTM dynamic of who's going where, like, What does that do? Is it time for him to go to the 450? Entick Knapp asked him the question in the press conference last night because we'd been talking about it on the Track Talkers podcast for a few weeks. And yeah, I mean, that's something that's so massive because do you think that Tom's ready to go to the 450 class if this shakes out that way? And for Seth, this is, you know, the culmination of years of effort for him and for Team Green believing in that kid after he had slammed himself and had to rebuild and all of those things. Like, his future set, RJ's going to Husky. Tom's got a future at KTM too. Like, they're good, you know, they're fine. But who does what from there that makes it so interesting? Because all three of those guys have way different careers after that Saturday in Salt Lake. I think I agree with JT. Yo, Seth's riding.
Just Seth pick a guy.
Seth is riding the best right now.
Just
Seth
pick
is riding the best right now.
Okay, thank you.
RJ
thank
has
you.
Nothing to all lose. Right. And then Tom, for him, like, you have the points lead. So how do you play it safe?
Why do we have to pick somebody?
Because this is sports talk radio. Pod.
No, it's oh, your sports talk radio. After last week, you didn't do that.
You specifically said last week this is not sports talk radio.
This is what we do. This is what
no,
we do.
No, it's not.
It's fluid.
By the way, so we had Seth on the show a month or so ago, and I asked him about working with Dazzy on riding technique, and then we had Dazzy on the show, and I asked him about working with Seth. Well, and I did mention this, but I just want to clear the air. I ran into a Michael Byrne in the pits, and he is a class act and a real gentleman. And Burner was giving me shit about maybe saying on the shows that Dazzy's training Seth, which I didn't say that. I mentioned Burner. And it wasn't like Burner was like, hey, man, you know, Dazzy sucks and I'm the guy because he doesn't do that. But I just want to clarify that Seth trains with Burner on the bicycle and that kind of in the gym and that kind of stuff. So I want to clarify that, just
well,
for,
it's important. It is important for Burner because he's running a business, right? Like this is his livelihood is training these riders and setting up this program. So that's where the clarification comes from. I don't think it's like a personal offense that he's taking to it. It's just, this is but, the work they put in. So,
yeah. And I mentioned it. I mentioned training with Burner, but I guess for Burner, it wasn't enough. So,
I've had the same conversation with him. I've had it last year too. And I understand where it's coming. I just want to make sure people aren't like thinking he's trying to take all the credit for no reason.
No.
Like, this is his wife's work right now.
Yeah. Burner would never do that. Yeah.
To be their best.
Yeah. Burner's too classy for that. He's awesome. But he was giving me the shit in a nice, friendly way. Cause we're good friends that, perhaps I didn't make it clear enough that Burner trains Seth. So I know that I was more focused on, I know Dazzy was working with us some riding technique stuff, but whatever. Yeah, so just FYI. Michael Byrne, rules. Still good dude. And then SMX Futures. We got the Fedortsov. He finally did it. He did it. He's been the fastest guy, and he won the championship. The championship was given out. Congratulations to him. He did the job. If he had thrown this away, dude, I would fear for that kid's mental health if he threw this one away.
We got to figure this out because there were no points. There was nothing different about this race other than it was designated a championship, but there were also number one plates at every other round. So be that as it all may, we really got to take a look at how this is structured.
It's pretty... Yeah. I mean, well, look, we saw it before, right? Cochran won when Juju and the other kid, Bennick, were the fastest crashed. Dudes. Yeah. Right. They crashed into each other. And then Casey Cochran was world champion of SMX. Right. So I don't know, man. I don't understand it.
I don't know why we don't have points.
I don't know either.
I know that there's – I think they don't do points right now because – each round has different participants. They bring in local guys. They try to give other guys opportunities. So maybe the continuity side of it there, but none of those guys are going to win the championship anyway.
No.
So the guys, Timmerman and Lanny Gordon and those guys are battling for championships. So let's do it. We got 9 of these races on a calendar year. That's plenty. We have divisional championship for 250s.
It's not like they're going to school and they can't make it. They can't make all the races. It's not like they're like, you know,
So in talking to them, their whole calendar now is these races. Like they're not doing like spring nationals and all that other stuff anymore. Like these 9 races that's their contract. So to me, like now you have this championship, it's already laid out. The teams are on board. They're giving them contracts based on this. It's already all there. So
wait a minute. This is interesting. So are you telling me like some of these big amateur races are going to struggle to get these kids there?
Yeah, so like Landon Gordon, the top guys, they're not doing these other amateur races anymore.
What do they do? Loretta's Futures? Boom.
I don't want to comment on Loretta's because Loretta's can be an outlier. Like, it's so big. But
no,
like,
I'm saying they've got to do Loretta's.
I don't know. I don't know. But
okay.
Where they would go to Daytona, then they would be at Spring-A-Ding. They would be all over these amateur nationals.
Yes.
All through. They're out on all that.
Normally, yeah. Normally, right, all right. That.
So Loretta's would be the only one that I can't specifically answer to.
Right. Huh. Anton, you got any thoughts on that program?
I mean, exactly what you just thought, to hear that, like, the local, not local, but the B-tier amateur events, like the ones that really make up the bread and butter for so many promoters and amateur families through the year, like, to know that those guys aren't there. But then, if anything, does that open the pipeline for the kids that need a step? You know, like, if you already have those kids that are the Landon Gordons that are already Team Green fulfilled, and they're already operating at that level where it is a full-time job, take them to the next thing and then open the path line a little bit more for the guy that is a grassroots racer trying to figure out, how do you do a four-day amateur event that I've never done and I don't have a $750,000 motorhome with Team Green bikes next to it?
Shout out Landon Gordon, and these type of kids aren't going to win the 14 world championships at Arizona Cycle Park anymore. So I guess they're going to lose out on those titles. But, it's interesting. That is an interesting thing, JT. I didn't really know those guys are doing that program. But, yes, I agree. Stop with the number one place at every round and championships. It's ridiculous. But shout out to Club MX guys, to the Russian kid for winning.
Yeah. So it is a fundamental change from what we've seen for the last 15 years probably.
Yeah. Are there contingency at SMX Futures and shit? Like, is it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The teams. I mean, that's part of their deal, right? Yeah. I don't know how it's structured, but they're getting paid to do well, just like they would at those spring races.
Speaking of that, I talked to Vincent Way a little bit. He's my rider, my amateur rider. We had a rough day again. We can't stay off the ground. His dad rarely crashed. His dad was consistent.
He has to be beside himself because he never crashed, to your point. And Vincent, but this is not a new thing for Vincent.
If you've
been watching him for a long time, which I know you have, he is really fast and really loose.
So it's really weird. Anyways, and speaking of Pittsburgh, and Brock Glover ran into Ryan Holiday, and so stoked at Pittsburgh Supercross, unbelievable. And then I ran into Mike Muey, so stoked on Pittsburgh Supercross. I ran into John Knowles. John Knowles just beside himself at Pittsburgh Supercross. I couldn't handle these people. It was too much. It was just too much, man.
I'm on board. I thought it was a phenomenal event.
I don't want to hear about it.
It's a top tier Supercross for me now.
I don't want to hear about it from all these people. Just pipe down.
I heard from one person that they wish that we were in St. Louis aside from Pittsburgh, and it was not me, and I was dying. I was like, "Listen, must be in St. Louis. Get the hell out of here."
Listen, Anton, you got an SMX round. You have an SMX round.
Yo, we're good.
That's going to be great, man. Having the track in the convention center, it's going to be super cool.
It's unbelievable.
Everyone
thought of Anton, JT, right? When that was announced, everyone thought of Anton.
Our travel budget for course heading this year, blessed by that round, 35 minutes from the house. But then the day after is the official Bike Life Ride It Out Day in St. Louis, all through downtown. So SMX race Saturday, Ride Out on Sunday. I think the juxtaposition of that weekend is excellent.
I will be on the Fly It Out portion.
Oh, you don't want to say? I can call my people and get you in. You can lace us up. We'll get you bikes.
JT, can I get a Shinko road bike tire for my YZ450? Can I get a street bike tire?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
You need a different wheel, though.
I'll be there. I'll be there, Anton, for the ride out.
My guy Bobby will put you out on the street.
I have been on a group pit bike ride through St. Louis downtown. That was really fun. Like, pit bikes just mob through downtown.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. I gotta go because I got the Martin brothers here for the show and they want to go to dinner, and so we're gonna go to dinner. All right, so I'm gonna go with J Mart and A Mart, and we're gonna make fun of Phil the whole time. So
cool.
Good times. Thank you again for doing this, Anton. Thanks everybody for watching on YouTube and listening to the pod. We're doing the pod as usual. Again, Matt Fly Racing, use the code to save. Renthal, Maxxis, Brunt, Work Boots, Motorsport.com, Onyx Maps, all on board with us. And Anton, thank you for stepping in, buddy. Awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And JT, thanks as always. And thanks for listening and watching, everybody.
This has been the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Motorsport.com, Renthal, and on RacerXOnline.com. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners. Don't change.